Compassion. Kasewatsuin. I remember when I was a kid, you know, we lived in our community, of course, and we never locked our doors. Our door was open all the time. I don't care if we were gone for a week or whatever. Our place was always open. So my sisters that lived nearby, I said, oh, I went and picked up a loaf of bread from the cupboard, mom's cupboard. You know, well, if you bring it back, that's the deal, right? Nowadays, we can't do that. You got to have a security system in your house. Sometimes. Not all the time. The other one is very important is Kagisimawin. Cree spirituality. That's important to all of us because it's our direction, it's our meaning for life, and that is really coming back into our area. The coming of age ceremonies, very important to our area. I've noticed, and I think someone should do a research on that, the coming of age ceremonies, because those people that have gone through the coming of age ceremonies don't get themselves in trouble with the law, they're not promiscuous, because they get taught by elders what to do, what not to do. Three of my granddaughters have gone through that whole process where they've been part of the coming of age ceremony. And it's no different than some of the other people that have their own way of coming of age. But this is important for our young ladies, our young men who have become that status of either man or woman. So those are very frequently taking place now in our communities. The elders, you know, pull their kids out out of high school or junior high school, or right, Judy?
Yeah.
And they're gone for 4 days because they got to do the ceremony with the elders. The other one is Nehiwewin. We all try and remind our children, our grandchildren, whatever, to try and learn the language of our Cree people. And so that's important. I don't care if you're Cree or Ojibwe or Haida. You should learn your language because that's important. It identifies who you are, but also it identifies you in doing the ceremonies if you want to partake in a ceremony. And one word that elders will always use to their young people is Ahkamimawin. Ahkamimawin. Keep trying. You go to ceremonies and people, the elders, Waskapewsak, the helpers, will always say, Ahkamimok, Ahkamimok. Keep trying. If you don't get it right this time, get it right the next time. So, Ahkamimo. Any questions? Yes. Ladies.
Okay, I can speak.
I'm not going to speak for the ladies.
It's usually when a young lady has her first moon time. And so if she's at school or wherever she's at, she's pulled from that surrounding, especially if there's boys or men around. And then her mom or her bokum or somebody will come get her and take her home. And so then the mother arranges for four elders to work with this girl. And so that's when she's so leaving her first outfit, makes her first meal. Learns what it is to be a woman and to protect her body and to treat it with respect. Right? So Lori talked about that. The girls that we've known are not promiscuous, you know, they're setting goals and that sort of thing. And usually with the men here.
You know when a young man changes his voice, a squeaky voice to, hey, I'm Johnny Cass. That's when they're sent to a ceremony. I was actually sent to I was 12. I was sent to my uncle, John Lewis. And I had to sleep in a sweat lodge for 2 nights. So that was my lesson.
What's really exciting, I taught Wachasca School the division for about 30 years. And the last 7 years is consulting with First Nations. And now when young girls have come to their ceremonies, nobody questions why they're not in school. And usually the teacher gets time off to go and participate in the final feast that the girls prepared and the gifts that she's made. So it's really exciting. And one of the young men in our schools had his in grade 6 and the whole classroom. So it's becoming, the school's starting to recognize the importance of the ceremony. You know, sometimes you learn more outside of school than in school. And so they're trying to pull everybody along this journey so they can learn and understand. I think it's just awesome.
The last one I want to talk about is the Indian Act. You know, we're the only people in Canada that have a special act called the Indian Act. It's been there since Confederation. Do we have any copies? That act's been there for many, many years. Like I said, since Confederation. Still used by about 90% of First Nations people. 645 First Nations across the country. We still use it in Obima. I don't know why, but we do. I'm not a proponent of the Indian Act because I think it's archaic, discriminatory, and it violates human rights. So that's my stand on the Indian Act. But these are things that you should be aware of. Under that particular legislation, we couldn't vote. We weren't allowed to vote until the Canadian Bill of Rights, Human Rights, came about back in 1960. So that's important for you to know. We weren't afforded a post-secondary education. If you did, you could have lose your status as a Treaty Indian. Our children were apprehended to go to school. We have documented cases of that, and of course, I've done that to the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. Cases where kids were apprehended to go to school. We've had our own people done because of residential school in Obima. And we couldn't practice our spirituality. That was done away with. We couldn't do that. We weren't allowed to go into taverns or hotels with bars until 1970. That's when the Drybone case was approved in Supreme Court. So that kind of hit me. Because around 70, I turned of age, right? Being a good Cree boy. And we had all these family members because they weren't allowed to go in a tavern. All of a sudden, they're given that right. And people that never drank before were going into the tavern just to see how they felt and having a beer because they were just refused that year before. So we had a lot of those over the period of time. But prior to that, I knew all the bootleggers because I used to drive my brother when he wanted to drink. So we knew all the bootleggers around our area. But that created a lot of issues for us. You know, because of that, they withheld that for us. And if you take a look at the history patterns and the decades ago, you'll find that there's a lot of issues that have been attached to it through FAS, FAC, FASD, and all these things that are the social problems that we're faced with. So that's a big issue. And, the other thing is that we couldn't do any contracts. We weren't allowed to do any contracts. We could not hire lawyers. That was against the law. And a lot of those only changed in 1951. A major revision of the Indian Act came about at that time. So although they were not as harsh as they were, we were starting to build some trust with the Government of Canada. I remember two of my sisters attending Alberta College in the 50s, and my parents had to pay for their education. But it was only when the Hawthorne Report came about in 1961 that First Nations people were allowed to go to university with some assurances from the Government of Canada. Prior to that, you have to do it your own or else lose your status. That's the way it worked. So as a result, there's a problem there with Native scholars, not as many taking place. But now we do have a lot of Native scholars, which is good. And hopefully there will be a lot more where they can take over their communities and become the role models that they want to be in their communities. So those are very important to us as First Nations people. And I know the RCAP, or the Royal Commission on Aboriginal People, in 1992 suggested that they should change the Indian Act to an Aboriginal Act, and I kind of agree with them, provided it's done with proper consultation with utilizing Native scholars and lawyers who know what to do. So that's my take on that. Any questions? Good, you guys are real quiet. Yes?
I was wondering if any Natives were conscripted during the Second World War, or even the First World War?
They weren't conscripted, but they had the free choice of going to war.
Oh,
But they were never treated properly when they came back as Canadians. They weren't allowed to give, you know, the homesteads, the land that they were promised. They weren't allowed to do that. The pension, they weren't allowed to do that. So yeah, there was this lot of discrimination, and they went on their free will to fight for Canada. And there was a lot of them, especially in eastern Canada. There was quite a few from our area too that went to the first, second, and also the Korean conflict.
So you're saying they lost their status?
No, they didn't lose their status. They just weren't treated properly as Canadians.
They didn't get all the rights that other veterans got. Settlement, the education, when they returned.
Mm-hmm. What would you do with the Indian Act? Do you think it should be abolished or just revised?
I think revised. Yeah. I want to be kind of hold back on it.
Well,
personally, I'd say, oh, dump it. But no, it has to be revised because there's so many people that, our own people, that still need some protection of governments.
With your consultation?
Yeah.
Aren't the recommendations of the Royal Commission the kind of revisions that you would want to see?
Yeah, you can, because right now, say, for instance, if Samson wanted to have their own form of self-government, you can go to Parliament and ask for that. They did that with Shishal First Nation in British Columbia. So there's others. I mean, there's the Queen of Scapiac in Quebec, 1982. They've came right out of the Union Act. They've done their own. And they're doing very well. James Bay Cree, you know, the Quebec Hydro, they've got a lot of billions in dollars in terms of in their coffers anyway. The Haida land claim that was done in 1999 in British Columbia, they're doing, I think, quite well. The White Horse, I mean, in the Yukon, some of those land claims, they've done themselves very well getting out of the Indian Act. So it's there if bands can get out, but it's other issues like the economy, the independence, setting up businesses, because we weren't allowed to do that. When we were doing peace sales, I always laugh because it was kind of hilarious. My first trip to Ottawa, one of the first trips I had, was meeting with the department officials in Ottawa. This was about 1975. And I know this guy very well, you know, talked to him. I thought I knew him quite well, but I obviously didn't. His name was Doug Meredith. I'll name him. I don't know if Doug Meredith is still alive. But anyway, we went and talked to him about setting up a trust company. He kind of laughed at us. There's about four of us from our council and from our area. He just started laughing at us, making kind of a snide remarks, and said, "You guys want to set up a bank, and you're not even Jewish." And my brother was with us, and Arna, of course, called the minister's office, Joe Clark, and the guy ended up going someplace else. So I said, yes.
So what's left in the Indian Act that offers some protection for some very First Nations?
As far as I'm concerned, nothing, because it's been a detriment to First Nations in terms of business, in terms of membership, and in terms of all these things that I just named to you, you know. So to me, though, there still has to be some protection for First Nations people. The people who are vulnerable, because if you take a look at it, there's a lot of issues that are outstanding, and a lot of our members still suffer from a lot of poverty, dysfunction, and all those other issues that are attached to the social norms, you know, in our society. So,
so as long as the Indian Act is even there in its detrimental form, it's an obligation of the federal government to provide those.
Absolutely, because their rights are protected under Section 35 of the Constitution. So they have to be held accountable for that. So there's many issues on that, and that's why the treaties play such a big role and a big part. Because on one hand, the government is trying to lessen the responsibilities of treaties, And they're doing that by, you know, like for instance, in Medicare, they're saying you go to Medicare, and I'm sure some people, maybe some people know this, but, you know, they're taking, their Indian Affairs has taken out those, you know, not paying for the medicine anymore for people. In fact, our people are starting to pay their own medicines. So that's part of it. Any other questions? Yes.
Are there any plans to revise the Indian Act, like with First Nations lawyers?
No, there are, even the Prime Minister said he didn't want to revise the Act. So,
no. Yeah.
He's working hard at doing nothing, though. Just kidding. Yeah.
My understanding is that was what the whole Royal Commission, I mean, from 1992 on, there were several meetings to try to do that, but it has never, the recommendations of that commission have never been enacted. Right?
How many have witnessed, how many have seen the Royal Commission? It's like they're so thick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any recommendations ever brought forward?
Yeah.
No. Over 600 recommendations and it's sitting there. And it cost the government of Canada $58 million for that report.
For nothing.
So.
For nothing.
Right, a quick question. Is this a good time to think about a 10-minute break?
Yes.